now broadcasting the Webcomic Beacon with your hosts, Fess and Tanya.
Yes, welcome to episode 8 of the Webcomic Beacon. I am Fess.
And I'm Tanya.
And with us we have Eric.
Hello, everyone.
Gothia.
Hey.
And Tom.
Good evening, everyone.
And this week we are going to be brainstorming a webcomic together. Eric, do you want to tell a little bit about your plans, the initial plan of this?
Well, we don't have a lot of an initial plan. The idea was to get on some people who do story writing on a regular basis and sort of just see where we can go with an initial idea. And talk about our individual styles of developing, and hopefully we would start with some seed, some basic idea, and develop that idea to the point where it could be a workable webcomic, or at least so we could show how we develop characters. And so that was the basic thing. We were talking a little bit, and we said our basic seed of an idea was an introductory scene that we had come up with where we have, the idea was the police come into a diner where a waitress is working and they tell her her father has died. And that's a seed, and we were going to work on developing it from there. How we're going to do this, we'll find out.
This is a webcomic beacon first, ladies and gentlemen.
Dun, dun, dun!
Having absolutely no plan as a webcomic beacon first?
Oh, no, that's pretty typical.
Okay, come on, we get more plan than that. Okay, so...
We do?
What was... the initial... So we have the initial setup, we have the seed.
Yeah. And I figured we would just go round robin, sort of talk about how individually we would work on setting this up. And I started off with the seed because, personally, that's how I always start a story. There's a general idea that I like to develop. And then I think people can just sort of jump in as they want. Does anyone want to talk about how they would develop that seed?
Absolutely. God knows that I can never shut up. My first question would be, what sort of genre would we be putting this in? Please come into a diner, talk to a waitress. Look at that from the different things. We can take a look at it from a fantasy aspect. We've got a bunch of orcs coming in to talk to the waitress of the local diner. Science fiction. We have the Galactic Police coming in to talk about an incoming invasion, and this is the Galactic Princess who's been hiding out. Modern drama.
Wow.
We can go through. The police are coming in. It's Chicago police coming into a waitress. Her father is an officer who's just been killed. So the genre has to wrap around, and that's what's going to be our big placeholder. So what genre are we going to be taking this place in?
Yeah, and I agree with Tom, and that often is personal preference, and also what you've been doing. So, I don't know. How do people feel on genre? What do we want to do?
As far as what you said, I don't think the police come in and say, your father's died. That sounds way too cliche to me, so I would want to avoid that. Personally.
Okay.
I love cliches, though. Cliches are so much fun. I mean,
these are only cliches.
New and different.
Exactly. Cliche is a great way to start off. If you can start off with a cliche and then take it into a different direction, that can throw people faster than you can believe. Mm-hmm. And it can throw them, hopefully, in an interesting way. Man wins a lottery ticket. Okay, where do we go from there? Police come into a diner, talk to the waitress. Where do we go from there?
Yeah, I guess, an example.
It goes back down to, first thing you have to do is set up the environment that's going to take place. We know we have police, we know we have a diner, we know we have a waitress. That covers so many things. What's going on outside of there? What are the things that are going to be interacting with these people? Or is this just going to be taking place in the diner itself, where that is our only set location?
Ooh, I like
and
that
even
idea.
Then, who's coming into the diner?
Right.
So kind of Twilight Zone approach, where you never see beyond this initial capsule of time and space.
Exactly. That was the original concept of something like Star Trek Deep Space Nine. You know, rather than going out and exploring the universe comes in here. Instead of going out and exploring the city comes in here. And any good bartender will tell you that you can find out more just by sitting behind a bar and listening to people's stories than you can going out and asking people about things, because there people are coming in to open up to you.
Right.
And I like this idea. I like this. This is a sort of interesting idea of having the single camera webcomic with the same background to everything. And even to take it even further, we can have, I mean, just to take the cliche, we have the cliche where the police come in, they inform the waitress that her father has died, she goes out to solve the mystery. To turn that cliche on its head, we say they come in, they tell her father has died, and the mystery gets solved within the diner by people coming to her. And having just the events that go on within this diner have our story unfold.
We need to back up a little bit more. We need a year, because if it's Chicago, there are certain things we know about Chicago, but that's not going to help us much until we have a year. Is it 1920, 1940, 1960?
Right. 3020.
A decade.
I mean, a decade. 3020. I like the sci-fi angle, like it's like an orbiting a space diner or something like that.
Actually, to me, the reason why I said Chicago is, being a Chicagoan, I say let's do a genre that none of us have done in our webcomics.
Right.
Let's make the time period 1929.
Ah, then it's we'll be lackadaisy cats.
So that gives us the Depression. That gives us everything that's going to be happening then. And let's make it a Pulp Fiction type of thing. You know, let's have the Mystery Men of Doc Savage or The Shadow, or the investigators like Mike Hammer. I mean, let's have you get such a rich environment from Chicago during that time period. So, just off an offhand comment, that gives us a plenty of environment.
Oh,
people are used to modern day. People are used to science fiction I keep dropping his name. Phil Folio has shown us with the steampunk, sometimes the takeoff of the familiar yet not so familiar thing can really work well.
Right.
Well, do it.
Things is to take an existing genre and an existing cliche and to warp it about. So, just to summarize what we're talking about here and to sort of start to focus in, it's 1924. Is that correct?
Late 20s. You know, the roaring 20s are starting to wind down. We're starting to get into the Depression.
And we're going to have 19, but it's going to be 1920s, but it's going to have the Pulp Fiction twist on it. So you're going to have
you just gave me a great idea. Police come and talk to the waitress. They aren't the main characters. The waitress, two booths over from where the waitress is talking, the police come and talk to her, tell her that her father, her husband, her brother has just been killed. And two booths away is an armchair detective. All he does is he sits in that diner, he listens to people's stories, he asks questions from people who have been on the scene, and he solves it from there.
From sitting in the diner?
From sitting in the diner. That way you get everyone else doing all the legwork. You get all that rich environment, and all he does is he's the central placement that controls all the pieces on the chessboard.
Now, I have seen that work successfully in science fiction, so it would be interesting to see that in more of a terrestrial setting.
Well, actually, this is where it's actually all come about. Arthur Conan Doyle, creator of Sherlock Holmes, was an amateur detective. In fact, he based Holmes on one of his professors, a doctor, who was the basis for Dr. Watson, and he was able to just go through and look at somebody, as Holmes did, and say, here's who you are, this is what you do for a living, this is where you had, this is what you had for lunch 2 days ago, just from the clues on the people.
Early profiling.
Okay. Yeah. Goffey, what do you think on this? How are you feeling about this?
How am I feeling about it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it would be interesting to do something just a little bit different. I mean, we've seen male detectives, the whole fedora hat, London fog trench coat, so many times over and over and over again. And even though the scene is unusual and that he's never really moving out of the booth. I don't know. I'd like to see something a little bit different than just the plain old male
detective. Then let's flip it. Let's make the waitress the detective. You know, the police are coming to her. She enjoys being a waitress because it gets her out, it gets her to talk to people. The police are coming to her to solve this.
That's sort of
what
she's
our armchair detective.
Oh, she is. Okay. Because you're like, well, two booths down. And I'm like.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, the two booths, if the armchair detective sitting in the booth doesn't work, let's flip it. Let's bring it back to the waitress. The waitress is the one who the police are coming to talk to about a murder, about a crime scene. And she'll be the one, as she's sitting there and talking amongst the patrons, she'll be listening to them talk and listening to the patrons talk.
Okay.
And she'll be solving it.
Well, why make it her father then? Because then it's kind of close to home, and then we have to deal with the whole grieving thing.
Then we don't.
Yeah.
This is part of the story. Yeah.
Let's
make it
her
somebody else.
Hearing something.
Eric, you have something to say?
Oh, well, I just wanted to. I mean, I love what Gothy and Tom are doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to say this general concept of what's going on here. Right now we're going through the concept that's called killing your darlings, mm-hmm. where you have you have these great ideas, but you keep on saying, no, that's not really what I want to do. Okay, it's not her father. We're going to kill off that whole idea, even though we had some neat ideas there.
Exactly. It all comes back down to character concept. It comes back down to in developing the characters. As you've seen right here, I mean, we had the basic concept. And we've gone through the different genres, and we've decided on the genre. We've gone through the character types, and we've brought up references from past stories and seen how those would work out and what they can bring to our characters. We've gone through and lost our main character, and we've brought her back so that everything works around where it's like whittling a piece of wood or making a statue. A great artist once said, Michelangelo, said that basically the art was already in the stone. All he was doing was freeing it.
Well, that's a subtractive process, too, though. This is more like clay, where you add and subtract to it. So it's not quite like marble. Marble is...
I know,
you take
I know how thick my head is. Marble is a good reference for my head.
Well, I have a quick idea here, just to play off of this. What about... Okay, you're talking about that she'd be basically the detective in this case, but... I think it, but if we cut out that the police are coming in to talk to her about her husband, why not? How about this situation? A police officer's coming in, or detective's coming in. He's you know, basically on his lunch break, and talking to this waitress about the case that she's on. Maybe they're like they're old friends or something like that. So that's why he talks to her a little bit about it, and throughout the day, you know, he's just kind of musing over some papers and some photos and whatever, and like she's elsewhere talking to other customers, and she's the one hearing things, and maybe she's helping to piece things together like later in the day as she hears more things that are connected to what the officer is trying to find out. Unless that sounds a little
too
cliche.
I like the idea of having that. Actually, I like the idea of having it less directional. Like, they're not coming immediately to her for help, but rather that she's, you know, coming to this understanding that she's piecing things together throughout the day. It would actually give you probably better pacing.
Yeah, like, she's
realizing that. I mean, that actually that works great with the time period. Remember, this is before the 40s, before the war, before Rosie's Riveter.
Right.
With all respect to our females, our distaff members here, women were second-class citizens back then.
Very much so.
So they're going in, they're ignoring her. She's just a waitress. And she's the one that's going to be going through and collecting all this information. And, of course, one of the officers, the one who she reveals the big secret to, is going to take the credit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I almost like the idea that I like the idea that she sort of reveals the big secret without even letting them know that she figured it out. And so you have this person, she figures it out and then goes over to the detectives and says, I was just talking to so-and-so. Man, he was going on about this. And sort of lays out the answer for the detective.
Drops it casually.
The detective says, my God, that's it. And goes out and arrests and you know, talks about how smart he was for putting all these pieces together.
Yeah, I like that.
I like this idea of this Sherlock Holmes character who's sort of working out of this diner and helping out the restaurants and all the people. And almost very subtly doing it. The sort of master manipulator.
Well, you take away that typical glory hound, you know, detective version, and I think it adds a lot more depth to the story. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I like this character. This is a good start for the character.
Exactly. And placing it in the time period that we have, that gives her some built-in limitations as well. They're not going to take her seriously because she's female. They're not going to take her seriously because she's lower middle class to upper poor. She's got a lot of things against her. So, I mean, she just can't come straight out and say, you know, here's your murderer. She's got to think on her feet to be able to get them to understand that this is it and do it to where in such a way that she isn't just giving them the answer.
Well, if we wanted to hobble her further, we could always make her a single mom.
Oh,
well, you were going to say something.
That, well, if we're going to be doing a single set, if we're going to be doing a single set piece, that's superfluous to it.
Like off your talk.
Well, the thing that I find interesting about this is you always know those certain people that can make somebody think it was their idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I can see her being the kind of person that she tells. You know, the policeman or the detective, whoever it is, it's going to be, you know, that kind of clueless, the clueless hero. And she tells him so that she makes it so that he thinks it's his idea. You know, I mean, you've met people like that, you know, it's just as they were saying, the master manipulator. And I just, there's something about that that just makes me giggle. And I really like it.
Why does the detective have to be clueless?
Well, the thing is that sets it up so that if this were to become a really interesting and great and wonderful project, we could, you know, it could continue. Because if you break the story, then you've lost that trust with your patrons in the restaurant, and you're never ever going to get more information. Because as soon as you come out as being the one that snarks, you're done.
It reminds me of Inspector Gadget and Penny. You got the brainless detective.
I'm thinking more, rather than having him be the detective be the incompetent boob, let's make him a good detective. She's better, and she has more contacts on the street because of the patrons in the diner.
It would be very easy to wind up with him just as a foil. And, you know, you don't necessarily want to create a foil in a character.
You can just make him on the wrong track and not make him a boob.
He doesn't have to be incompetent.
Right.
Someone made the comparison of Inspector Gadget and Penny. Let's make it Commissioner Jim Gordon and Batman. He's a good cop.
Right.
Batman's better.
Very good.
So this is a good detective. Our waitress is better. But she has to do it more subtly than he does. He can go out and he can be the bulldog. She's more of the cat who has to do it quietly.
Ah. I like that.
And so it's not that she has to completely drag him to the solution. She can just give a few clues. And he's smart enough to say, oh, hey, you've just given me some good information. That's why I always come in here. I can always figure out stuff from what you tell me. And he can be a little bit of a misogynist and sort of not realize that she is, you know, she knows this as well.
That can actually be the first story, the first time he comes into the diner. He doesn't know her, she doesn't know him, just another one. He's just frustrated as all get out because he's got this crime. And let's make it something spectacular. Let's make it a Chicago version of the Ripper.
Okay.
There's a serial killer out there. He's got the clues, but something just isn't clicking. So he's going out, he's frustrated, he's getting a cup of coffee, and she asks, what's wrong? It's a friendly face. He talks about what he can talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And then she asks questions that lead him into the path. You know, it's just conversation things on the surface.
Right. It's like, you know, I think a good method would be... Jack the Ripper, serial murders. I'm not sure, I don't remember what the M.O. was, but maybe he can't really quite pin the M.O. on anything in particular. It seems to be random, but he has a feeling that there is a pattern, and if he finds a pattern, the classic thing, if you find the pattern, you can try to figure out where he's going to strike next, and maybe that could be a good angle to start from, as in,
Well, see, this is where it gets fun with me, because I actually studied criminal forensic pathology, so.
That's actually not that people are giggling. That's a great thing to do. I mean, I can go through and write about criminal forensics from what I know as a reporter. Mm-hmm. And going through and actually studying that stuff and getting a little more in-depth into it, then you're going to get a CSI, bad example. You're going to get a forensic file feel or some of the crime TV to where you actually have an actual handle on it and are able to put stuff in there. That makes it more interesting for the people, because then they're seeing a glimpse of the reality mixed in with the fantasy.
Yeah.
And even if someone knows nothing about the subject, they can tell if you know about the subject.
For absolutely.
I have always avoided writing crime dramas and this sort of thing because I know nothing. I haven't read mystery novels. I have a vague sense that the legal system is you go in there and you say something in front of a judge, but I don't really know anything about it. And even if I tried to create, and even if I did research, it would come right through how little I know about this. This is where your expertise is really useful and really helps out. You should write about what you know.
Right.
Well, okay, I'm sitting here as a romance novel writer going, so do these two have a seedy little thing going on between each other, too? Is there that love-hate dynamic? What's their... are they attracted to each other? And I'm sitting here thinking, like, all the romance angle possibilities.
Yeah, well, I actually like the romance novel angle of this. A lot of times in the story, you can have the surface story and the deeper story of what's going on, the surface journey and the deeper journey. And here we have the deeper journey in our first story, we are revealing how smart this waitress is, because when the reader comes in, they're going to see just a waitress, and they're not going to know that she is, she is Sherlock Holmes of this story. They're going to say, oh, look at that nice waitress. And we can sort of play with our readers a little bit by having this surface sort of romance flirty thing going on the top. All the while, underneath, we have what's really happening is this waitress is solving the mystery and helping out the detective. And I think this is also... This is where the detective's head is. He's coming in and he's flirting with the girl and he's talking about this case and she seems really interested, so he keeps on talking about it.
Ah, that's good.
And so you have that sort of the flirting on the top of sort of the detective's point of view. I'm coming in here and flirting with the cute waitress. And underneath you have the murder mystery being solved.
And then you have the audience coming to the realization of her intelligence along with the officer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. She's no longer just eye candy. She's got a brain up there, too.
Yeah. and we don't know if we're going to have the officer come to this realization, but you can have the audience figure it out at some point.
Right.
Well, exactly.
And that's always...
We need to back up some. We need to figure out, where's this girl from? Is she a native Chicago? Is she from Indiana? Is she a rural girl that went to the big city to make a few bucks? Or, is she a crack hoe that's decided that she needs to clean up her act and start waitressing? Or, what kind of background is this girl going to have that she's obviously she's smart, she's probably a little on the funny side, probably got a wisecracking humor to be able to, deal with as a waitress.
Mm-hmm.
But where is she coming from?
Think of the time period. Maybe she's an orphan who just was on the streets. The only family she knew is dead. So she just did whatever she could to make a living. Self-educated, self-taught.
Well, what if she's a middle-class debutante that has fallen on hard times? She could have been a very well college-educated young lady that got kicked out of girls' school when, mom, dad... had no more money, and now she's all of a sudden having to wait tables.
The way I'm seeing this, and the way I'm taking on this, the diner is the best place for a female master detective at this time period.
Mm-hmm.
This is where all the information comes through. This is where all the police come through. this is, people are open up to you in diners. And I sort of like the idea of this character. This character has chosen to be here simply because she can solve things and get things done within the diner. And it's sort of her choice. But I think that we do have to ask how and why for this character. How
well, you know, actually, that sparks something with me. Why? Why does she know this stuff? Why does she have this background? She's in the diner because her father was the professor of criminal studies at Chicago State University.
Nice.
Or maybe her father was a great police detective on his own who was killed or something, you know, in some point in time. And so she has always wanted to follow in his footsteps, but as a woman, she never could.
What do we have to kill off her father? I kind of like the idea of her father still being alive.
I think we kind of dropped that.
Make the father the Mycroft Holmes for her, the one who's got more knowledge, more experience, and is better at it. So, I mean, if someone, every once in a while, he'll come into the diner when she's having problems. We don't want to do it too often. You know, maybe she'll make a phone call. Who says? Maybe she's the owner of the diner.
Yeah.
Maybe the whole thing was set up just for that purpose.
He's her phone a friend. Yeah.
And she's the owner of the diner. Yes.
If her father was a detective and he was still alive, would the criminal element really want to go in there and talk to her?
No, I like the idea of him being a professor more.
I like the professor, and I think we need to scrap a woman in the 1920s owning anything.
Really? Oh, yeah. Okay.
Well, there are situations of that, but let's just have it through a false front. Nobody knows that she's really the owner.
That would make sense.
It would be more fun if her dad was a wino bum on the street, man.
Well, I think we got a pretty good start right here, but we're going to have to take a little break. We'll be back with the topic at hand in just a few minutes.
Brett Hanley with Casual Ramblings.
Yes, my fuzzy little muffins, it's another Casual Rambling. I'm going to be improvising it today because the theme of today's webcomic beacon is, as you know, brainstorming and coming up with ideas. So we're going to see how many ideas I can come up with on the fly while I sort of brainstorm into the microphone. I'm not really good at improvising when I'm just sitting here looking at my desk, so bear with me, I may not be as professional and polished as I usually am. Now, I'm not entirely sure what Fess and Tanya are going to be doing. You have to understand, I never know what Fess and Tanya are doing. Fess sends me an email telling me the general topic of the day. I write out a script, spit out some dialogue, and that's it. So when they say coming up with ideas for a webcomic, I'm not sure whether they mean specifically coming up with ideas for creating a new webcomic or whether they mean coming up with ideas for each webcomic episode. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to assume that they mean coming up with ideas for an individual episode. Anyway, just wanting to build a webcomic without knowing what kind of webcomic you want to make is just stupid. It's a lot like saying, I want to build a piece of furniture without knowing whether you wanted to build a sofa or a table and just going out and cranking up the freaking table saw. Don't do it. You know, if you don't have anything that's making you do a webcomic, then don't bother me and don't bother yourself. However, if the problem is that you're not coming up with good ideas for individual episodes, might be able to help you there. I'm going to assume that we're talking about a joke comic where each individual episode stands alone as a joke. And the trick to that is don't think about it. The funny will come. The funny will come if you read the paper, if you watch TV, if you watch your family, for God's sake. If you go to work and watch the people there, just keep your eyes open, see the things that people do, and think about how you can expand on what people are actually doing to make it seem funny. Yeah, I know it sounds stupid. Are you saying I can come up with ideas by not coming up with ideas? Well, sadly, yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. You can come up with ideas by not coming up with ideas. You push your brain in the wrong way when you're trying to force ideas, and it just doesn't happen. But if you let it not happen and just think about other things, then things will strike you as funny. And what strikes you as funny is going to be funnier in the long run than anything you forced anyway. So, that's it. That's my improv version of Casual Ramblings. Hope you enjoyed it. Back to you, Fess.
Find more from Brett Hanley at CasualNotice.com.
The The Webcomic Beacon is proud to be an affiliate of The Geek Media. TheGeekMedia.com has a number of geek-related websites, podcasts, and blogs for you to check out. Check out TheGeekMedia.com.
Webcomic Beacon is hosted by Zephyr.net. Free hosting for free thinkers.
All right, we're back, and we're going to recap what we have. And Tom, you want to do that?
Absolutely. We started off with a basic premise of just a simple concept. Police officers come into a diner, talk to the waitress. From here, we determined what sort of genre we're going to be talking about. We went through the different types, you know, science fiction, fantasy, whatever, and went more towards the pulp fiction, late 1920s style, where after our long talk, we've determined that it's going to be armchair detective, sort of like a Sherlock Holmes-ish type, where the waitress is just sitting and listening to people. We have our detective, changed from plural to singular, come in, frustrated, and start to talk with her. And between the conversation between her and some of the other patrons, other people who come in, she is able to edge him into the direction to get the mystery solved.
Very nicely done.
And this is a good start for any type of story writing, but we're going to focus this on web comics. And from here, I just want to pose this out here. Kind of want to think of the art style, how you want to present this, 1920s, early 1930s. I could definitely see a black and white stylized comic being fairly decent for this. But what do you, does everyone else think?
Go ahead, Tom.
We can do black and white. Frank Miller did very well with black and white with Sin City.
Mm-hmm.
However, anyone who does a film noir wants to do it in black and white, very heavy black and white. I say tilt that a little bit. Do it in color and then reduce that down to sepia tones.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, but then it almost becomes a copy of Lackadaisy Cats, but without the anthropomorphics. So you're going to have to maybe not go pure sepia. Maybe just a little bit different tonal change, maybe warmer grays instead of that sepia brown.
Like an old photograph that has faded a bit.
But you know what? Something else we really need to look at is what's the talent base you've got for this webcomic, because do you have an artist that can manage that?
Right.
Yeah.
Pipe dreams are pipe dreams. If you don't have an artist that can produce the art, you're going to wind up with little, you know, Mickey Mouse sketches, little balloons and stick figures, and that's not going to float.
Hey, stick figures work for order of the stick.
That's
The talent pool is definitely it. There are artists out there that can do it. Frank Miller, Sin City, very heavy in the blacks and white, very stylized, and that would work. A webcomic that's out there now that I actually think the arts would be perfect for something like this is called The Midnight Shift over on Drunk Duck. It's a cop story, but with monsters. It has a Frankenstein's monster. It has vampires, werewolves. The artist does a great stylized job, and that would work terrific for something like this.
The artist from Akimbo Comics, the same thing. He's very stylized. He's even done some works where it was, you know, a little bit older, and it's black and white, but done in a very detailed style.
It sounds like people really want to go for a more realistic look to this. Is this an automatic thinking for more seasoned webcomicers and writers? Or, I mean, why wouldn't a more cartoony look work? Or even stick figures? It's like, is there an automatic thing to think about making it a more realistic presentation?
Again, it goes back to the genre.
Right.
I mean, cartoony works for a lot of things. But cartoony in a crime drama, especially one that's a period piece like this is taking place to be,
mm-hmm.
You would want something in there that has bite.
Yeah, it needs to support the tone.
Realistic edge.
back up a second. Who framed Roger Rabbit? It depends on how much comedy you're going to put into this story, because that's a perfect example of a time period, the detective story, the costuming, the colors, the whole nine yards. It really, the comedy is what pulled that off.
So it does come down to the tone.
How much comedy you're willing to write into this?
Good point. I mean, when you talk, what I'm picturing in my head right now is more of a Dashiell Hammett, Maltese Falcon, Nick and Nora Charles, to where you've got that edge on there. And
if
using
there's
the black
humor,
and white,
it's sarcasm.
Yeah. I mean, if you just look at what we proposed here, we have said we have detectives sitting around in a diner solving the mysteries within the confines of the diner, and we can go outside of the diner and sort of see, show what's happening out here. We don't have to be stuck with that premise. But most of our action is going to be people sitting around at a diner. If you're doing that with stick figures or cartoony figures, it's incredibly dull. I mean, imagine Order of the Stick doing My Dinner with Andre. I mean, that's what we would be talking about.
That would be miserable.
One of the best scenes that was from a TV show called Monk. I hope people have seen it.
Oh, yeah, I love that show.
There was one episode where Monk, played by Tony Shalhoub, masterful, was trying to solve a mystery, and it was one of the suspects made a comment about having nude photos of his assistant. And when he goes back and talks to her about it, I mean, he's trying to stonewall things because he doesn't want these photos getting out. He finally talks to her about it, and she says, "What makes you think he's got those photos anyway?" And there's a 5-minute period there of nothing but expressions from him, from anger to doubt to disbelief. That's what you've got to have. You have to have an artist that can pull off those expressions. It's something that could be as static as our period, our piece. You have to have someone who can do expressions real well.
Right.
Yeah, the face is going to be the centerpiece of this comic. It's going to be people's faces as they think, as they come to realizations. And if it's very cartoony or if it's stick figure, the faces are greatly reduced. And that gives you a lot of power to have more dynamic scenes when you go to stick figures or cartoony images. I mean, you can do really crazy, extreme things. But we're looking for something with subtlety in the expression, and that you have to go for realism. You have to.
And you just hit the key word right there, subtlety, because that's been a period piece that's basically people talking. You have to have those subtle touches.
Right. Now, because we're talking about a more serious genre and we're talking about those subtleties and that realistic version, are we talking full comic page?
I don't think a newspaper style would be a good idea. I can picture a full page and not sticking to assorted panels. Like, you may want to be more stylized and have a 3/4 page of a special angle, expressions, provoked thought. I don't think a newspaper style would fit at all with
all
this.
Right.
Actually, I disagree.
Really?
There have been plenty of comic. I mean, everything from Prince Valiant to Steve Caniff, to where you can do a story with 3 panels during the week plus the Sunday special. So a story like that, it would be more dependent upon the art, because the story would be taking over a period, but it could be done in a newspaper format.
Do you think that would make the pacing very difficult, though?
Yeah, the pacing would be very hard because, when you have the newspaper panel, there's a very set beat setting to that, a very set buildup. And part of this is just psychological, and part of this is the freedom of a full page. In a full page, you can have more time elapse. And also, when someone is reading a full page, and I know I've done for other comics, I don't mind if nothing happens on that page.
Right.
If I'm reading a newspaper strip, and this is purely psychological on the reader, if I don't get a reward on that last panel on the strip, I'm annoyed. Because
there's going to be some payoff in that third panel. However, we're also talking webcomics. We're not constrained. We can do whatever we want. I mean, if there's a period, a thing that will work with only three panels, do the three panels. If it takes two pages, do the two pages, because we're webcomics. We're not bound by the print.
Oh, right.
That's actually a very good point.
But people do think about the print at the end, like whether or not it's good, and they want to, you know, sell it later. So I think that's why people are still have those page sets in mind when they start a webcomic.
Can I have a really quick suggestion?
Go right ahead.
This is just from my own experience. I worked on Cameo Comic, and for about 3 months there, the scenes were all basically in a one-room living room. And if you can find an artist who is willing and able to do that, just that one scene over and over and over again, let me tell you, it gets monotonous. I think I drew that couch so many times. I knew every little fold and wrinkle and pillow on that couch. And you're going to have that problem when you're drawing the inside of a cafe and that bar countertop and that waitress uniform and the cashier register over and over and over again. And so it's going to take somebody who's not only creative at doing facial features and realistic emotions, but just to do that scene creatively over and over and over again, it will drive you insane.
Well, then let's switch the format. As much as I love them, who says we have to stick with a traditional artist? We could do something. There are plenty of people who are very experienced with 3D graphic programs. Do it in something like Poser, to where you have your set and you don't have to redraw it every time.
Yeah, but here's the problem with Poser, and this is the same problem we get with the cartoony images. The expressions on Poser images are flat.
Yeah.
And I mean, even the best Poser comic. But here's two things I want to say on this. First of all, we don't have to be restricted to staying in the diner. I think it was a nice thing to get us going, but I think once we got down to actually writing the story, we're going to find it incredibly limiting to sit in this diner the whole time. And I think there's a lot of mechanisms we can use to leave this diner, either through someone telling a story and then flashing out of the diner.
Right.
Yeah, that was my thought.
And
the diner has to close. We have to show a life outside of it.
We can follow the waitress home, or we can follow the detective home, and then we can hear their own, basically, inner monologue.
Yeah, and I don't think I think when we actually get to it, we're not going to stay in the diner that much. Because, I mean, even from a writing standpoint, I'm going to get sick of writing about that diner.
But it does give you a nice ground. It gives you a nice base.
That's going to be the center of the whole piece. You know, we'll go outside on occasion, but we're always going to come back to the diner.
Right, yeah. And then as people tell their stories, you can explore their environments too, but you're still really in the diner.
And
now, let me jump off to something somebody else said here, because it's something that's very fitting for the period, and that was inner monologue.
Yeah.
I'm a firm believer and hater of thought balloons, but to stick with the genre, would we want narration in the panels?
I think it would be almost expected for this style.
Yeah.
I think it would be appropriate as well.
I think we should have narration, and just to pull back to art for a second.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about our artist, and we're talking about really a great artist we need to work on this.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to say, oh yeah, someone who just my buddy can draw this. We have to have someone who's very good with realistic images. We need to have someone who's very good with expression, and who can really bear to draw the same bloody diner over and over again. And one of the things I always want to tell people is don't be afraid to pay your artist. Don't live in fear saying, I've got to find someone to work for free. Because I can tell you, if you pay your artist even a small amount, all of a sudden, drawing that same old couch over and over again becomes a lot more tolerable. Because all of a sudden, they're getting money for this. And they say, all right, I'll draw the best couch I can. I'm getting paid for this.
I agree. Yeah.
No doubt. I mean, no, go ahead.
I mean, and I have three comics now. All three comics I pay my artist, and it works out fine. You can make your money back through donations and through ad space, and if you pay them, you get better artists and you get a better comic. Yeah. And I don't think you have to live in fear of that.
We touched on a lot of very good points with starting any type of story, and especially we touched on a little bit with presenting that as a webcomic. From here on out, there's still a lot more details to go over, but this is a very good start, and we're going to have to wrap up the brainstorm session here. And I just wanted to go over this. Now, the reason that the Webcomic Beacon is hosting everyone here tonight, I think, Eric, your initial idea was to maybe do this as a sort of podcast, like a webcomic brainstorming podcast. Is this correct?
Yeah, we came in here, and the idea is, if this worked out and if the people enjoyed this, do this on a regular basis, take this story and, you know, really develop it all the way to the end, and then maybe do another, and sort of work through ideas and, you know, show how we do things by not telling people what we do, but actually showing what we do. And I mean, I'll have to talk to the other people and see how they feel about this. But I think this is something we might continue on a regular basis.
We better. I've fallen in love with this character. I want to see where this goes.
But the question is, who keeps the rights? How do you work this out?
There's no rights.
Between the people who are discussing, at least as far as anyone listening to the Webcomic Beacon, I'm going to just go ahead and say the story idea is a copyright of the people that have been already talking about it, so wait till they do something with it or ask them if you want to get in on it.
Right.
Just so nobody just takes this and runs with it and they finish it before you're done talking about it.
No running.
Yeah. Hey, go find your own ideas, people.
It goes back to our don't be an ass.
Yeah.
A suggestion. Don't be an ass. All right.
That's
our job. We're professional.
So we'll let you guys know whatever feedback we get. We'll turn on to you guys. If you guys are going to be starting your own separate podcast, let us know, and we'll update people on our site. If you think you may want to come back next month and try this out again, if you don't know about setting up your own, I'm sure we could set up another week in which we could revisit this if it's warranted and if you guys would like to.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. We'll see what works out best for all of us.
Even if we don't develop this very far, it's still a fun creative exercise in creative writing.
Right.
Absolutely.
And so, we all need exercise.
Yes.
So let's get to the plug-in here. Eric, where are you from? Where do you want to send people if I give them a link?
My main site is xern.com. xern.com. And if I have one more piece of advice to anyone making a webcomic, never do that with your webcomic. Come up with a word that people can remember. Don't make up
yeah.
All right. Gothia, where are you from?
I'm from American Gothic Daily, americangothic.comicgenesis.com. I will be leaving Comic Genesis soon, though. And when I get that all set up, I'll tell everyone all about that.
All right, sounds good. And Tom?
You can find me mostly at crossworlds.ws, that's crossworlds.ws. You can also find me over at thewatch.com. Let's see, Xern, Abstract Gender, Sailor Sun, I mean, go down the list.
You're a big forumite, huh?
The Kevin Bacon of the webcomic world. But just stop in at 910cmx.com and you'll see the list of all of our associates, and you'll find a ton of great webcomics there.
All right. Well, guys and ladies, thanks for coming on the show and having this topic with us. We're going to take one more break, and we're going to come back hopefully with some more stuff before we close off the Webcomic Beacon. Once again, everyone, thanks for coming on.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Would you like to get involved with the Beacon? Just send to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com.
special thanks to Witchy Bunny of HiddenDisguises.com for being our announcer, and also thanks to Brian Lake for providing music for the webcomic Beacon.
And now, webcomic reviews with Diana Knock.
This is my review of What Birds Know by Emily Freiberg. And Matthias Thorelli. It updates at whatbirdsknow.atspace.com. It contains some mature content, but if you're old enough to watch Adult Swim, you're old enough to read this comic, pretty much. The comic is centered mostly on a group of three girls going on an exploratory trip for a school assignment. That assignment? Go to the woods and collect 100 mushrooms. But all does not go to plan, and spooky things happen. Suspension of disbelief is helped by the rather down-to-earth fantasy setting. I'm actually hesitant to call it a fantasy setting. There aren't any elves or monsters running around, and aforementioned spooky weirdness is the closest thing to magic that has appeared so far in the story. Mostly, the setting feels vaguely medieval. That's the best way I can probably describe it. First of all, I will admit this is a comic that I've had my eye on since it started in 2006. I mean, I like it. The art is solid, the story so far is intriguing, and the characters are believable. It's an enjoyable read. That said, I do have some issues. My main problem is the design and navigation of the website. Unlike most webcomics you see, which have the latest installments on the main page, What Birds Know has its own little cutely customized archive section, sorted solely by page number. Not by date, not by title, by page number. This comic is slow to update, so I'll often go months without checking it, and let the archive build up a bit. Like I'm going to remember the page number of the last one I read. Every time I go back to see what's new, I end up clicking random numbers until I find myself where I left off, which can take a little while. Oh, and the comic opens up in a new, smaller-sized window. Suffice to say, it's annoying. The comic could really benefit from a simpler, more informative presentation. At least divide it into sections so you can have some idea where to start checking. And for the love of God, keep it in the same window. The less hunting and clicking that has to be done to locate the meat of the website, the better. Doubly so for webcomics because of the immersion factor. Like I said, it's slow to update. Every now and then, a few new pages are posted. Waiting a few months for those updates to build up is the only way I can read it personally and stay sane. Not only are the pages slow to appear, but they're not very dense storytelling-wise. When read all in one go, it's decompressed, but still, stuff does happen. In that respect, it's not very well suited to being a webcomic, where you have to deliver some sort of punch with each update to keep most people coming back. What Birds Know is more of a slow burn that's obviously written to be read all in one sitting. Still, I forgive this because A, the comic itself is of good quality, and B, publishing installments and finding an audience online is this age of indie comics as black and white bi-monthly comic books were back in the 80s. It's just the smartest, simplest, most cost-effective way to do it. Honestly, almost all of my problems with What Birds Know come from the online presentation itself and not the comic, which you could probably interpret as a hearty recommendation. Two small quibbles about the comic itself. First, at the very beginning of the comic, the redheaded character Vandy is chided by her mother, but later on in the comic is shown in a flashback scene to be chronically ill and, let's say, unable to interact. I don't want to spoil it too much for those who are going to decide to read it. I'm left to wonder if that was planned. Did her mother get better? It feels like a mistake going through the archives. Maybe something completely flew over my head. I might have missed something. I am a little oblivious at times. My other problem is the occasional small amount of sloppiness in the drawing of the characters. I don't notice it that much, so that's really small, honestly. This may seem like a really negative review, but I want to stress again that I like this comic very much, that it has believably human characters, and the little mysteries of the girl's journey have me hooked enough so that I plan to stay with the story until the end. And when the inevitable collection book is published, I'll probably buy it. I want to give special props to the spooky fantasy mystery direction of the main storyline, which is not quite like anything I've read before in a webcomic, and the coloring and the lettering. That last one may sound like an odd thing to compliment, but so many webcomics, which have otherwise good writing, maybe good art, they don't give much thought to coloring and lettering, which can really bring a project down, in my opinion. Like the rest of the comic, the coloring and lettering are not fancy or overdone, but I think they do a very good job. As it stands of this recording, there are 192 pages currently available on the comic site. I can't say for sure, but it feels like the first chunk of a modest epic. A contradiction in terms, maybe, but read What Birds Know and you'll see what I mean. Well, once again, you can read What Birds Know at whatbirdsknow.atspace.com. It's a free website service, so there may be occasional downtime. I've noticed that before when accessing the site. Don't hammer it or anything. And once again, all feedback on my review is welcome. I'm not above approving myself any more than a webcomic artist or a writer is above approving themselves. I guess that's it for this week.
Find more from Diana at jinxville.com. Let's hear some webcomic impressions from Aaron Edwards.
Hey, this is Aaron again. I got about a six-pack in me. I got a cold. And my microphone's a piece of shit. So let's rock this out. By Andreas Gustafson, Invincible Jeff at longurl.com is one of those shitty MS Paint comics. I could probably stop right there, but these are always a trip to get into. What is the artist trying to say that's so important they'd invite the ridicule of running a shitty MS Paint comic? Too much credit. This one has a gag-a-day gimmick, centered on Jeff either getting fatally injured or failing at the topic at hand. He always returns next comic without a scratch, physically or socially, so that's the gimmick, I guess. At first, this one had a sort of train wreck charm because it seemed totally without merit. However, as time went by, I noticed some surprising wit that's totally writing-driven, so that was kind of neat. What started as almost stylishly sketchy art has been cleaned up and full-colored. It actually lost something there. I like the old art better. Well, shitty, at least it had personality. So that's Invincible Jeff. Check the podcast notes for the link. Next, we have Radcliffe by Linus Anderson, another free-hosted comic you may as well check the podcast notes for. What the fuck? This is a period comic about the second-best detective in the Sherlock Holmes era, and his overweight female sidekick. Together, they investigate the paranormal, mostly being vampires, all with a probably Whedon-inspired tongue-in-cheek. Give Linus another 5 years of consistent work, and maybe he'll have enough skill to share a polished project to a receptive audience. As it stands, the writing can't compensate for the art can't compensate for the writing, and the web design looks like the same shit I was doing 10 years ago. And I hate picking on kids, but seriously. Drawing this kind of shit's one thing, but submitting it for public review either makes the artist a masochist, or genuinely lacking in self-perception. The heartbreaking thing is that I can see the actual effort into the art, writing, and web design, but if this isn't by a 16-year-old, I may as well drink myself into a stupor enough where I can offer more positive feedback.
Find more from Aaron at anatoly.com.
The webcomic Beacon's transmission is coming to a close. We love feedback and would like to hear what people think about today's show and if they'd like to hear more. Also, if your webcomic or any webcomic that you know has hit a webcomic milestone, as in 100th or so webcomic, or a year or 2 years, etc., so as hit for their webcomic, we'd like to know about that, if it's going to happen in the next week or happened in the past about 20, 30 days, let us know, and we will mention it on the show. And next week, Tanya, what's going on with next week?
Next week, we're going to have special guest Brock Heasley of Super Fogies, which can be found at, looks like, thethirdworld.com, which is thirdworld.com. We're going to be talking a little bit about developing a comic style.
Awesome. Well, the transmission is over. This has been Fess.
And this is Tanya.
That's all for The Beacon. Be sure to tune in next week.